Sustainable Home Catalyst, Episode 5, 16 Simple and Cheap Ways to Save Energy Around Your Home. Welcome to Sustainable Home Catalyst. I'm your host, Ben Hildebrandt, and I'm here to help you learn how you can make your home more sustainable for you, your finances, and the environment. My goal is to help improve the quality and sustainability of existing homes in North America. This is episode 5, and in today's episode, we will be discussing many different, simple, and cheap things that you can do to save energy around your home without blowing your budget. We'll be covering a lot in this episode, so I've prepared a PDF which summarizes everything that we'll be discussing. This PDF and the full show notes can be found at shcatalyst.com/005. Before I dive into the meat of this episode, I just want to know, what did you think about the intro music? I just wanted to spruce things up a little bit, and I found this awesome track that I totally love, and I hope you love it too, or enjoy it, or at least can tolerate it, because unless absolutely everyone complains about it, I'm keeping it in, because I love it. It's my kind of music. Also, if you've been subscribed and waiting for my new episodes to come out, you may be thinking sometimes, is another one coming? Or is Ben giving up on this? How long do we have to wait? I just want to let you know that I have not and I will not give up on this podcast. I'm in it for the long haul. I'm currently just trying to make time to prepare and get these episodes out. And currently just starting off with the whole podcasting thing and figuring things out and gaining efficiencies. Currently at the beginning, I'm spending somewhere between 6 to 12 hours on each episode between preparation, recording, working on the blog post, editing and publishing each episode. It takes me a lot of time. I'm trying to cut that down, but right now it's a hard time finding the time to get all that done to get an episode out every 2 weeks. That's my goal, though. As I find efficiencies and get better and faster at doing this, I want to get into consistently getting one episode out every 2 weeks. And finally, I've decided to concentrate my focus a bit more. Now, I'm not just going to focus on sustainable homes in general for new and existing homes, but I am going to focus specifically on making existing homes more sustainable through cheap and easy steps, as we'll be discussing in this episode, and also in taking more significant steps through doing major renovations. I want to cover basically anything that you would want to do on an existing home that can make it more sustainable, both minor things and major things. Now, if you're looking at designing and building a new sustainable home, all of these things can be applied to a new home as well. The main thing I was looking at, though, is when it comes to new homes, there's a lot of things that you would do in designing a new home that you can't really do with an existing home. In the future, I might cover some of that or maybe start another podcast around just new sustainable homes, what you can do for designing and building new homes. But right now, the focus is existing homes and what you can do, what anyone can do to make them more sustainable. So that's my end of my housekeeping babbling at the beginning here. So let's dive into things. I wanted to cover today basic, simple, and cheap ways that almost anyone can save energy around their home. I really enjoyed dreaming about renovating my existing home to make it much more efficient and also someday building my own sustainable home. But for me right now, and also for most others, building a new home or doing a major renovation is way out of our financial reach, or other reasons might be hampering us from doing something like that. So while it may make me feel warm and fuzzy when I have these sustainable dreams, I want to be able to do something now to make my home more sustainable. I want to reduce my costs and also increase my comfort and enjoyment in my house as it is now without incurring high costs. Luckily, there are quite a few things that can be done in an existing home to make it more sustainable, many of which are relatively cheap or even free. I want to focus on these over a couple of episodes to give you solutions that you can use without totally blowing your budget. First, I want to address a couple potential questions that you might have. What do I mean by cheap? I haven't set a hard line as to what I consider to be cheap. Over this episode and the next, and possibly another one after that, I'll be covering cheap things that you can do in your existing home. I'm looking at things that can be done easily and quickly, and are much more cost-effective than paying thousands of dollars for major renovation. Generally, I'm looking for solutions that are as cheap as possible, but not more than a couple hundred dollars. The goal is to improve the sustainability of your existing home on a budget, a very small budget in some cases, or in most cases. So what is so great about energy efficiency? When you reduce your energy use, you will not only be more sustainable to the environment, but you will also reduce the operating costs of your home. And when it comes to heating and cooling, you can also increase your comfort. So in this episode, I'm going to be focusing on energy efficiency in existing homes and cheap or free things that you can do to reduce energy use in your home. And I'm going to save water efficiency for the next episode, so stay tuned for that. In saving energy, I've basically narrowed it down into three main areas that we can break it up into to cover. So the first is saving electricity. Second is reducing your heating and cooling requirements and thus saving the energy you need to heat or cool your home. And third is saving hot water, reducing your hot water use around your home and thus saving the energy that you would use to heat your hot water. I'm going to be covering a lot of solutions in these sections, and I'm not going to go very deep into each of them. If you would like more information about specific solutions or have some that you would like to add, now, my list I'm providing here is not exhaustive by any means. There are many more things you can do, but I'd love to hear what you think, what questions you have, or if you have any more ideas you'd like to add. Just leave a comment at shcatalyst.com/005. Scroll down to the bottom, leave a comment. I want to know your thoughts. I especially want to know if you have ideas that you would like to add to this list. Just leave a comment below so everyone can see what you've done in your home to make it a little bit more sustainable and to save energy. When I'm talking about specific products, I've tried to include links to the products in the show notes so you can get more information about them or even buy them if you wish. Most of the items are items that I've used myself. Now, some of the links in the show notes are affiliate links, which means if you choose to make a purchase through them, I'll earn a small commission, and that will help support me in producing this podcast and covering some of my costs by putting this out. I want to say, if you go in and check out those items, only buy the items that you feel will help you on your journey to a more sustainable home. First area we're going to talk about is in saving electricity. The first item that we need to do is to become aware of the electricity that we're using in our homes. Now, one easy way to do this is through using an energy meter. These are devices that you plug into an outlet, and then you plug any device into it. The energy meter then displays the energy that you're using with that device, and can be programmed. They can even be programmed with your electricity cost, and then display the cost of using that device over a certain time period. For example, you can plug in your computer and then check a month later, and it'll give you a grand total of the cost of running that computer over the past month. There are many energy meters out there. They are carried in some hardware and retail stores, but are very easily found on Amazon. And I got the energy meter that I'm using off of Amazon, and I really enjoy it. It's got a great display, easy to use, simple to set up, and I've got a link for that in the show notes. Thomas S. Monson once said, "When performance is measured, performance improves." Now, this statement wasn't made in regards to energy use specifically, but I believe it definitely applies here. Simply by measuring our energy use, we're able to understand and improve it. It's kind of just like when we use apps on our phones to track the food we eat. I've done this in recent months myself, just tracking my calories, and not really with a set goal. I'm only getting so many calories a day, but just by being aware of what I'm eating, I'm able to more easily cut down and reduce the girth of my waist a little bit in the process. And it's the same with energy. If we just are better able to understand the energy, the electricity we use, we can improve it just by being more aware of our habits. So the second item we can do, first we discussed, was using an energy meter to be aware of the energy we use. Now the next item that we can do, number two, is to unplug laptop, tablet, and cell phone chargers, or any other electronics when they're not in use. Even when they're off, many electronic devices use a small amount of electricity if they're still plugged in. Now, this is known as a phantom load. You can find out what the phantom load of different devices are by using an energy meter and just having that plugged in and checking in the evening before you go to bed, and then check the next morning. No one's used it overnight. You see how much energy it uses. Quite often, these phantom loads are relatively low, but it does add up over time, especially if you have a dozen devices in your home, each using a small amount. That small amount times 12 adds up a lot. Now, number three in saving electricity is to ensure that you have LED bulbs installed in the light fixtures that you use most. Now, I don't believe it's really worth replacing the bulb in your storage room that you turn on once a month with an LED bulb. You're not going to get your value back on that. If it burns out, sure, replace it with an LED bulb, but I personally don't think it's worth changing out perfectly good bulbs that you never use just to have an LED bulb in there and save a bit of energy. So, number four, ensure that any nightlights you have are LED and not incandescent. Nightlights don't use much electricity, but they're off and on 10 or more hours every night, and sometimes they're on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. So any savings can add up over the course of the year, especially if you have several nightlights around your home. Now, I switched to using LED nightlights a few years back, and I got some screw-in LED bulbs, and it's kind of interesting. The standard incandescent bulb that I was using in my nightlight used 7 watts of electricity, and I got a little screw-in LED replacement bulb, and it cost me, I think, $3. So 7 watts is peanuts. It doesn't really cost much, maybe a dollar over the whole year without doing a calculation. It's really nothing. But the LED bulb was like 0.01 watts. It's like way, way less electricity. So I thought it was amazing how much, proportionally how much energy you could save in that. Now, an awesome product that I've found that serves as a nightlight in my home is made by a company called Snap Power. And they started off with a couple campaigns on Kickstarter. And they've made these cover plates that go around your light switches or your plug-in receptacles that have LED lights built in along the bottom and special contacts that when you just screw on the new plate, it automatically contacts to the existing electrical power within that light box. I'm not going to get too technical on it or within the electrical box in there. All you have to do is install the new plate and boom, you have a functioning night light. And they say these lights are going to last 25 years and they're very low power. They use just a trickle of energy. I've got the light switch plates, which they call the switch lights, in my home, and I think they're totally amazing product. They do cost between $15 and $20 US, depending on what exactly you get, but I think for an investment you're going to have for 25 plus years, adds light where you don't have lights without using another plug-in. They also have a built-in light sensor, so when it's light in the room, the light's off, so you're not wasting any electricity in that way at all. Now, this sounds like a sales pitch. It's, well, maybe it is. I would, if you think that's an awesome product for you, get it. I love it. I have it. They're not a sponsor. I don't even have an affiliate relationship with them. So I don't get anything if you go to my blog post and click on the link to buy some, but I encourage you to do it. They're an awesome product. And I think it's totally genius that they came up with that idea, but yeah, Snap Power, they make the guide light, which goes over the plug-in receptacles, and the switch light to go around the light switches. Awesome product, uses next to no energy, lasts over 25 years, and they're just great. You get night light without losing any space or having to install anything else, and they're very quick and easy to install. Links are in the blog post for that. I encourage you to go and check that out at shcatalyst.com/005. The next item is to consider how you are cooking your meals. Are you heating up an entire oven just to cook up something that can fit within a small toaster oven? Or what about your possible energy savings by using an Instant Pot instead of a standard slow cooker? I heard an episode on the Green Energy Futures podcast recently where they featured Ron Cube, who they've dubbed the Energy Detective, and he compared energy used by different cooking methods to cook the same thing. Really fascinating episode. I've got the links in the show notes as well there. Number six, the final item for saving electricity around your home, and probably one of the easiest ways you can save electricity around your home, is to turn your lights off in rooms that you're not using. Many of you, like me, out there with little kids, you have to chase them around to do that. It's not so easy, and if you're like me, you may have tried different creative threats and consequences for when they leave the lights on. But if you're willing to invest a bit of money, however, you can get a motion sensing switch, which will usually cost around $20 for each switch. And that can automatically turn the lights off when there's no motion in the room. If you tend to sit in your room for a long time reading books, that might not be the best application. I do have a link in the show notes for one of those switches. Like I said, they're around $20. I think they're a great item to look into getting, especially a room that's not used very much, but the light's always left on. One thing I plan to do in regards to those motion sensing switches as well is to compare the electricity it takes to have that motion sensor running 24/7 compared to the electricity you save by having the light switch turned off. I anticipate they use a very small amount of energy, but I'm a nerd and I'm going to figure that out soon using my energy meter, and I'll let you know when I find that out. Stay tuned for a YouTube video about that. That's saving electricity around your home. Really quick, I'll recap there. Item number one we talked about was using an energy meter to be aware of the electricity you're using. Second was to unplug any chargers you have that are not in use because they do draw a very small amount. Three, ensure you have LED bulbs installed in the light fixtures you use most. Four, ensure any nightlights you have are LEDs and not incandescent. And then don't forget my shameless pitch about the Snap Power switch plates, cover plates they have that have some awesome LED bulbs built into them. Number five, consider how you're cooking your meals and if you're cooking them in a manner that's the most energy efficient, for example, using a toaster oven instead of heating up your large oven or an instant pot instead of a standard slow cooker. But different options out there, be conscious of how you're cooking. And finally, number six is to turn off lights that you're not using when you're not in the room or in the area. That's all I have for saving electricity around our homes. Next, let's talk about reducing our heating and cooling requirements. According to a residential energy consumption survey completed in 2009 by the U.S. Energy Information Administration, space heating accounts for 42% of a home's energy use and air conditioning accounts for 6%. Any step to reduce our heating requirements has the potential to make large differences due to the large amount of energy used in heating our homes. In warmer climates, reducing our cooling requirements can also result in a significant energy savings. Now, reducing our cooling requirements can also significantly increase our comfort during hot seasons. I've grown up many years in my life dealing with uncomfortably hot homes. And yes, maybe I should just man up and deal with it, but air conditioning is really nice. And thus, reducing our cooling requirements saves energy for air conditioning, and we can still be comfortable. So what are the different things that we can do to reduce our heating and cooling requirements and get some of these savings? First, we can use a programmable thermostat to turn down the temperature in our home, or we can do it manually ourselves, but we need to turn down that temperature a few degrees at night or when we're away. And also, in the summertime or in warmer climates, we can turn up the temperature when we're away. In cold climates, in wintertime, and cold, really cold weather, we never want to let the interior temperature get below plus 15 degrees Celsius, which translates to 60 degrees Fahrenheit, in weather below minus 15 Celsius, or plus 5 Fahrenheit. Because the reason for that, and I've seen this in a few homes I've worked on or been involved with, is that there are some locations within the exterior walls of our home, or in different locations of our home, that will be much colder than the average temperature in our home or the temperature that our thermostat's detecting. And if our set temperature for our furnace is too low and the temperature is below plus 15 degrees Celsius or even significantly below that in general for our house, there could be some really cold spots. And that will increase the chance of freezing a pipe and causing it to burst. And that could create a lot of expensive issues in our homes. So, in cold weather, never set the temperature for your thermostat below plus 15 Celsius or plus 60 Fahrenheit, just to make sure you don't have any issues with anything freezing during really cold weather. Second item we can do is, in the wintertime when we don't need light through a window in cold weather, we can keep the curtains or blinds closed for that window, and that provides a small area of still air next to the window, which serves a small insulating function. Now, what we want to do if we're closing all the blinds and curtains on our windows, we want to keep an eye out for condensation on these windows. In very cold weather, on low-quality windows, not only can we get condensation, we can even get a buildup of ice. Now, this is because the temperature on the inside face of the glass, when we have our curtains and blinds closed, can get really, really cold in some cases. So if you see condensation on the windows, you need to lower the humidity in your home, the relative humidity, if you're able to adjust that. And you can also keep the curtains or blinds slightly open so you still get a bit of airflow, and it will keep that air right next to the inside face of your window from getting too cold. Third item we can do, just kind of a translation of the second item, is to keep the curtains or blinds closed during warm weather on windows that the sun is shining directly through. Now, this will help prevent the sun from warming the interior of our home. The fourth item we can do is to ensure the exterior sides of our curtains are a light, reflective color. In our first home, we had a large living room window that faced east. The morning sun would shine directly through the living room and make it unbearably hot in just a couple hours at the beginning of the day. And we had brown curtains that we would keep closed in an effort to keep the room from getting too hot. And that made a noticeable difference, but we still weren't entirely comfortable. And we tried different things. And one thing we tried that worked a lot was pinning white sheets to the backside of our curtains. So the side of the curtains that the sun would strike was white. Now, this meant, in theory, that the heat from the sun would be reflected off the light-colored sheets instead of being absorbed into the brown curtains, causing the curtains themselves to heat up and become a bit of a heat radiator into our living room. Now, this made an amazing difference in our room. It made even more of a difference than just keeping the blinds closed, in my mind, for that room. So, if you have sun shining directly into a window and making your room unbearably hot, make sure the sun-facing sides of your curtain are light-colored to reflect as much heat from the sun as possible. I've found that to be an awesome solution in my home, and it's very simple and easy to do. If you're buying new curtains, just make sure it's light-colored on that side. And if you have existing curtains and you're on a budget, go to a thrift store, pick up some white sheets, and just pin them to the backside. It worked great for us, and we had them that way for several years. So, fifth item. If you're looking to get new window coverings, particularly blinds for your windows, get cellular blinds. Now, these provide an added insulation to your window when closed and can make a huge difference in the wintertime at keeping your rooms warmer, especially if you have lower quality or older windows. And it can also make a difference in the summertime as well, with keeping a bit more of the heat out of your room. Now, due to the increased insulation value around your window that's provided by cellular blinds, any condensation issues you might have would be amplified if you're installing cellular blinds. So keep that in mind. The sixth thing we can do to save our heating and cooling requirements in our home is to experiment with closing or opening different doors or heat vents in our home, particularly in rooms that we don't regularly use. Pay attention and see how it affects the temperature and air currents within your home. Now, it's important to know that by closing heat vents and doors in our house, this may affect the balance of our heating system and possibly reduce its overall efficiency. So to recap saving on our heating and cooling costs in our home, first, we can use a programmable thermostat or manually turn down the heat in our home at night or when we're away, and inversely turn up our temperature settings in the summertime or during warmer weather. Second, when we don't need light through a window in cold weather, keep the curtains or blinds closed. And again, we want to keep an eye out for condensation in those times where we're keeping our windows and blinds closed in really cold weather. In warm weather, we can also keep the curtains or blinds closed on windows that the sun is shining directly through to prevent the sun from warming up the rooms in our home. Four, we can ensure the exterior sides of our curtains are light, reflective color. This will reflect the sun out and prevent it from being absorbed into our curtains and heating the room through our curtains. Number five, if we're looking for new blinds, we can get cellular blinds, which provide an added bit of insulation to our window when they're closed. And finally, six, for saving heating and cooling costs around our home, we can experiment with closing or opening different doors or heat vents in our home, and particularly in those rooms we don't use. And we can see how that will affect the air currents and temperatures around our home. So that's six items we can do to save on our heating and cooling costs in our home. The third item we're going to discuss is saving hot water in our home. Every ounce of hot water that you use in your home takes energy to heat. Thus, saving hot water saves us energy. What are some of the basic strategies we can use to reduce our hot water use? First, we can use a low-flow shower head, which will reduce our overall water use in the shower and thus also reduce our hot water use. Now, I think it's important to research different shower heads, and if possible, like if you know someone that has one and it isn't too awkward, you could try out the different low-flow shower heads before you buy one. We learned a logical fact from personal experience that a side effect of using a low-flow shower head is that if it uses half as much water, it may take twice as long to rinse out your hair, particularly for those with really long hair. Keep that in mind. My wife was not too happy when we got a really low-flow shower head recently, and her shower length got drastically extended so she can get all the shampoo out of her hair. And if she listens to this, she might be a bit upset I'm bringing up this story, but whatever. Second, we can get a shower head with a trickle button. Now, when we bought our current house, the shower that I used would always run out of hot water before I was done, and I must confess that I do like long hot showers, and our hot water tank is a bit on the small side. I believe it's only around 30 gallons. Now, the shower head appeared to be from the early 90s, and I went to Walmart and I found a nice, cheap Waterpik, that's the brand, Waterpik shower head, and it had a trickle button. So once you got adequately wet, you would push the button on the shower head, which would reduce the flow to just a bit more than a trickle of water while you took care of cleaning yourself, soaping all up. And then you would slide the button back the other way and you would have full flow of water right away. So it's a great way to greatly reduce the water that's just going down the drain while you're lathering up. And you wouldn't even have to set the temperature again. Like people say, yeah, just turn off the shower and then turn it back on. But most of us have showers where by turning it on, you're adjusting the temperature. So you have to find just that perfect spot. So in this, you can reduce your water to trickle. You don't even have to turn the water off and reset the temperature. And I've been using my shower head for about 5 years now and have never run out of hot water since I've gotten that. And I absolutely love my Waterpik shower head. And I do have a link in the show notes to the current model of the shower head that I'm using and that I really like. And also, that style of shower where you basically turn off the water while you lather up and then turn it back on, I've heard that referred to also as military showers. So you can have a military shower by getting a shower head that has a trickle button on it. Third, you can get a shower faucet. So the handle that you use to adjust the temperature and flow in your shower, you can get a shower faucet that allows you to set the flow and temperature separately. Most shower faucets currently installed in homes only allow you to adjust the mix of hot and cold water to get the desired temperature, which results in the hot and cold water being on full flow in the center of the temperature range. Now, I've used a couple shower faucets like this while I've been visiting people's homes, and I think it's great. You have one knob to adjust the temperature and another knob on there, another lever to adjust the amount of water that you're using. Now, I don't have extensive personal experience with any specific products that do this, but I've included a couple of links in the show notes so you can read up more about it on some specific products that are out there. And that's at shcatalyst.com/005. Now, if you have the fourth item here, if you have an unfinished basement or other areas in your home that allow you to easily access your hot water pipes, install pipe insulation over them. As hot water travels from the point of the hot water tank, from right when it exits the hot water tank to the point of use, to the tap where you're washing your hands at or your shower where you're having a shower, it loses small amounts of heat as it travels through the pipe. So the longer the distance, the more heat is lost. And now, depending on the conditions in your home, I would say that this strategy may not provide any noticeable difference if your sinks or shower are less than 15 feet or so from your hot water tank. But in my house, I have over 30 feet of piping to get to my bathrooms. And before I finished my basement, I installed insulation over the pipes, and that made a very noticeable difference. I would say probably about 5 degrees difference in the heat of the water coming out of my taps and in my shower. So I was able to tweak down the hot water heater a little bit just by installing insulation on the pipes and thus reducing the heat lost as that water travels through the pipes. So straying a bit from cheap options, another thing that people think about in saving on hot water costs is considering the energy it takes to heat the hot water inside your hot water tank. Some people consider, maybe I should get a new hot water tank. So tankless hot water heaters address the issue of energy wasted heating water when you're not using it. But there are three things to consider before you take the dive and go get a tankless hot water heater. First is, if you have hard water with lots of minerals in it in your area, you'll need to install a water softener so that the narrow channels within the heater don't get clogged with mineral deposits. Second, tankless heaters also generally require more regular maintenance than traditional heaters to ensure they're running optimally and all the narrow passages within it that are required to heat the water quickly can get clogged up. We need to make sure they don't get thoroughly blocked. So regular maintenance is required with tankless water heaters. And third, if you're looking at replacing a perfectly good tank hot water heater just to get the energy savings from having a tankless hot water heater, reconsider that. The payback period of the energy savings will not likely be worth the cost of the new hot water heater. And basically, hot water heaters in general, unless yours is an absolute energy guzzler, uses tons of gas or tons of electricity, and you don't feel it's working very well, then I'd get a new one. But if your hot water heater is functioning properly, I don't think I would really worry about going out and buying a new hot water heater if you have many years of perfectly good service life left in your current hot water heater. Just get one. Just look at getting a new heater when your current heater is getting towards the end of its life. So if you are in the market for a new hot water heater and you have it in a room that is at least 100 square feet or 10 square meters, consider getting a heat pump hot water heater, sometimes called a hybrid hot water heater. Now, these are tank hot water heaters, and they operate with similar principles to those used in air conditioners, and they use heat within the room to heat the water in the tank. Now, this results in the room getting a little bit cooler, and thus the requirement to have a room that's at least 100 square feet. And now this is achieved with just the use of a pump, and there's only supplemental electric heat that kicks on when needed to meet demand. Now, these use far less energy than traditional gas or electric tank hot water heaters because you're just running a little pump. You're not running an electric heat element, and you don't have a gas flame running all the time to heat your water. It's just a little pump going to heat your water. So very energy efficient to get a heat pump hot water heater. I'd recommend it. I don't have one yet. And unfortunately, my furnace room where my hot water heater is much too small to get one, and it would not work very well. If you have a large furnace room or an open basement and you have the room to get a heat pump hot water heater and you're in the market for a new hot water heater, I'd strongly recommend it. They're a bit more upfront for cost, but they have very good reviews and they work very well and use way less energy than a standard electric resistance or gas hot water heater. Though not terribly expensive when compared to a major renovation, there is a great price range in these options to reduce your hot water usage. Now, remember that with these options, you're reducing both your energy and your water usage, which gives you kind of double points in increasing the sustainability of your home. So to recap the options for saving hot water in your home, first, use a low-flow showerhead. Second, get a showerhead with a trickle button to turn your water down to a trickle while you're lathering up. Third, get a shower faucet that allows you to set the flow and temperature of your shower water separately. Fourth, if you have an unfinished basement or other areas in your home that allow you to have easy access to your hot water pipes, install pipe insulation over them to reduce the heat that's lost as your hot water travels from the tank to the point of use, to your shower or your tap. Whether you're looking to save electricity, reduce your heating or cooling needs, or reduce your hot water usage, there are many options out there to reduce your energy use in your home without blowing your budget. If you have any ideas that I have not listed, leave a comment below the show notes. The show notes and download for this episode can be found at shcatalyst.com/005. If you have found this post valuable, and if you know someone who you think would also benefit from it, please share it with them. Also, if you want to get these episodes as soon as they're released, subscribe in your podcast listening app of choice, or go to shcatalyst.com/subscribe. Thank you for listening, and until next time, go do something to make your home a little more sustainable. The information provided in this podcast is meant to inform you of the many ways that you can make your home more sustainable. The information and opinions presented are solely those of myself and my guests and are based on our own experience and research. Before undertaking any major projects or any project outside of your own area of knowledge and comfort, you should consult a professional in your area that is familiar with local building codes, regulations, and construction practices.